This is Pop Culture Confidential, and I'm Christina Yerling Biru. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Writer-director Alex Garland's new film, Civil War, was divisive even before its premiere. The first trailer, a few months back, left some asking if the movie was exploiting tensions and anxieties in an election year. Would it be thoughtful, incendiary? Will it be good? Civil War stars Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, and Stephen McKinley Henderson as a group of war correspondents traveling from New York City to D.C. as an escalating civil war rages through the U.S. The film is a huge deal for A24. It's their most expensive venture yet, with a $55 million budget, as well as their widest release yet. It's almost always interesting when a film stirs up discussions and emotions, so this of course merited a review and a conversation. Well, my guest and I have seen it, and we're here to tell the tale. Executive editor of Awards Watch, friend of the show, Ryan McQuaid, welcome back.
Thank you, Christina, for having me on. What a wonderful, almost scary intro. Kind of yes. Like this movie. What a scary idea.
To quote Alex Garland. Terrifying Jesse Plemons in the film, what kind of American are you, Ryan?
I have thoughts on Jesse Plemons. Good Lord. I guess the kind of American that would be, like you're saying there, worried about a movie about a civil war in the middle of the election in our most divided time here in America. But here we are.
So we're going to talk about and discuss the film. But towards the end, I have some particular scenes I want to talk to you about, Ryan. So listeners, I'm going to let you know then that there will be some real spoilers in that section, just so you know. First of all, Ryan, I was saying at the top here that the trailer left people with questions. After seeing that trailer, what did you expect?
Okay. I think the trailer, we're just talking about the trailer, right? Before we talk about our thoughts. I think the trailer is one of the most eye-rolling, disgusting trailers I've seen in a long time. Because it's doing exactly the kind of fear mongering and gen up of people to get them to a movie theater that I don't like. I also feel like when we talk about the film, it's a massive manipulation of the audience and expectations, which is, you know, like, not to get on a side tangent. You know that lawsuit that happened a couple of years ago when someone sued the filmmakers of the movie Yesterday because Ana de Armas wasn't in the film? In it. Mm-hmm. I feel like this would be the better case if this went to court of a massive manipulation of the expectations of what a film is versus what the film actually is. And I think times are very fragile. I know that every political pundit tries to, you know, give us either like the dark days are coming or they try to give us a glimmer of hope. I think that we're kind of in the middle where it's like we have some hope, but it's very, very slim. I think the reality, sadly, of November, at least in the people I've talked to, is starting to settling in on potentially another Donald Trump presidency. Whether he's in the office or in jail is to be seen. And so his group, if you're just looking at it through a political prism, his group, the Trump base, seems to want to have one of these kind of events. They had you have the insurrection of January 6th. You have Trump talking about being a dictator for a day. Those are the signs and hints of not just from, you know, dictators in the Middle East or Putin or, you know, or even just in South America and countries there. That's how it started. That's how their democracy sort of fell apart. And so I think that I know that movies aren't harmful. Or it can't be blamed for certain things because, like, you know, people want to blame when I was a kid, Quentin Tarantino in The Matrix for violence in films, or people want to say certain things about sex in movies, and we've talked about that before. I do think, though, politics might be the one line where it could get a little dicey. But just off the trailer, I was not looking forward to it. If you've seen Alex Garland's previous film, Men, which is the most pretentious piece of shit I've seen in the last 20 years,
Not my cup of tea either.
not my cup of tea, as Spike Lee would say. And so I was like, oh my God, the guy that made Annihilation and Ex Machina and wrote some very other great films in his filmography. I was like, oh, is he one a hack? And two, do I need to go back and watch those and question whether those were actually good in the first place? And as somebody that does a podcast about going down directors' filmographies, I was not able to do that before this film. But it almost was like leading up to it, an exercise I almost wanted to do. I was not going to watch Men, but I
Including
was
his
just,
writing 28 days later, which of
yeah.
course has parallels to this one.
Exactly. But those are based in genre. And this is almost based in realistic fiction. There's no global zombie attack. It's just human beings, which are just as scary, I guess, as zombies. Yeah, that trailer. I don't know what you thought, Christina, but I despised it.
I felt the same way. I found that first trailer to be manipulative and it left me with certain expectations. But after seeing the film itself, I found it to be something very different. It surprised me in so many ways, particularly the fact that this movie is mostly about the fundamentals of journalism, journalistic ethics, and more had me thinking about films like The Year of Living Dangerously or Salvador or something like that in this political landscape, this fictionalized version of what could happen in the United States. But what was so interesting and fascinating is that the politics are intentionally vague. So the sides are difficult. You can't really grasp what side is doing what. The point of the movie is more division, and that the inability for us to come together to empathize and everyone pulling in different directions is more the point of the movie than the actual politics, which was what was so manipulative with the trailer. And I have to wonder whether Alex Garland himself was pleased with that trailer.
Yeah, I don't know if he
Less, we don't
would.
have to harp on it anymore, but that's a question I have when there's.
That's a good question.
How did you feel about the movie?
I don't know how you watched it, but I was lucky that they did a screening. I was at South by Southwest, and that was where the world premiere was at, and they screened it separately, like 30 minutes after the premiere at the Paramount Theater. For a whole section of journalists, it felt like every movie journalist that was at South by Southwest got the invite to go to the IMAX screening in Austin and watch it there. And I wasn't the only one in attendance. There was a ton of people in the industry. I know that a certain duo that won Best Picture a couple years ago were in the audience, and there were and so and actors and everybody. It felt like the screening to kind of be it. And Garland introduced the film and was kind of just a few words, but it wasn't really anything. And we were all sitting again, Christina, talking about expectations. We're all sitting in our seats going, "Why did we do this?" Like, there
Wow.
were critics around me, people around me. We were all sitting there like, oh shit, like, you know, what do we, you know, did we waste our night here going to this movie? Like, oh, I don't know if it's gonna be any good. Da, 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 da. And I have to say, it's one of the biggest genuine surprises I've had in a while. I really found it to be, like you, a very interesting look and subversion of obviously every expectation we had going into it. This movie really isn't about the sort of political divide. The sides are clearly drawn, and I know that they released a poster with the different territories, and we can talk about that in a little bit of how realistic or unrealistic some of those territories may be based off American politics.
California and Texas
California and Texas.
together again.
I was like, okay. But as the Western forces, okay, sure. But I found it to be really interesting, not just about, I think, the state of journalism inside a war state, inside political unrest, but the idea of what an image can say from a photojournalistic perspective of the dangers of getting said image, and that it is maybe the most interesting way of presenting the idea of a picture's worth a thousand words that I've seen in a while. I don't think the movie's perfect. I think there's, some structural aspects that I would kind of change.
Oh, I agree. It's not perfect, but
No, I'm curious about the ending from your perspective, like the last 5 minutes of that movie. Because I fully was invested by the end of that movie, but the last, like, I want to say
We'll get into
two and a
that.
half scenes,
Yeah.
I'm still thinking about it. And I think that honestly, what you said, that's the point. The point of this movie is to think and to have conversations, not just about where our media and where our journalists are portraying something or anything during an election, a genocide, just something maybe local. Because, there's everything that these journalists do in this movie, they're not doing some frivolous story. They're actually taking their job seriously. And wouldn't that be kind of like a nice change of pace? Like, I was watching Jon Stewart last night, and they started off the show talking about the fucking eclipse and making fun of the fact that the news media is covering an eclipse. Meanwhile, we have a tough decision as going on in this country. We have the ongoing battles in the Ukraine and in Gaza. We have an administration that is not doing really, they're doing the bare minimum. And we're all worried about what the fucking sky looks like. And like, this is our ongoing cycle of things. And I feel kind of Garland's talking about that in this movie, of that, like, we are still quote unquote kind of living in normally in our world in this movie, but yet there's the scene of like the small town of like
Yeah.
where the girl's just like, we completely just don't even think about the Civil War.
That's so true. They mention it several times in the movie. Both of the female photographers say to each other, my parents are in Colorado. They pretend this isn't happening. But let's do first. I want to ask you, you don't get to know the full story of what has actually happened in America. What is your take? What you were mentioning, the Western Front. The president is in a third term, so there's some
Yeah.
fascist stuff going on there.
I mean, it feels as if we're, I don't get into much hyperbole, as you know, Christina, but I think you have to with a movie like this, right? You have to go and stretch your belief to sort of also too, he kind of paints it with a broad brush to allow the audience, I think, to be able to inject their own fear into it. It's a little bit of, not to the same extent, and definitely not to the overall quality. It's a little bit of what Jonathan Glazer does in The Zone of Interest, is
Oh,
what
good
Garland
point.
does with his touch here of allowing enough of a canvas for not only him to inject his thoughts and move his story into the places that he needs to go, but allow the audience to place their sets of fears and anxieties that can be inflicted on serious places and ideas like this. So I think that America, who is the real central character of this movie, is in an authoritarian on the rise dictatorship. And this is the last ditch effort to prevent that. And it's honestly, the way the film portrays it, it's not very short-lived one. Because if you realistically know, like California and Texas working together to stop whether it would be Donald Trump or Joe Biden or whoever is in charge, and it would definitely be fucking Trump, or somebody like him. It makes sense from if you know about, the resources that both of those states can provide. Obviously, there's tons of military bases in both states, so they have the re the resources, the warfare to contend, and the economies to be able to withstand something like that. So it makes sense on paper. It's politically speaking, it's silly. You know what I mean? Because you would mean to like have Gavin Newsom and Greg Abbott work together. That's not going to happen in anybody's lifetime.
But isn't the reason for that just so that we won't immediately think red states, blue states?
I think
He
so.
wants to keep it, as you were
It
very
is a
eloquently
fantasy.
saying, this is not the point. You're injecting your own fears, and the point is that the divisiveness that we've come has just become so much that it doesn't really matter what side, whose side. You don't really understand who's on particularly what side. That's not the point. Everyone has sort of lost the real issues of what's going on, and that's what's happening.
Well, you know this from covering, journalism for so many years, is that when these dictatorships, these heads of state become all powerful, it's not just their enemies that fear them, their friends, their allies fear them. Because any false move, any wrong step, any just statement that is not completely 100% towing the line can lead to a bag over your head and put in a black site. And so I feel like that's why you can put your own, like I'm saying, you could put the Abbott and the Newsom thing in your head, but then you also have to realize, like, you have to know about dictatorships a little bit. You have to know about how those places are in a state of just awkwardness as countries, because there's like you think of somewhere like Russia, where there are hundreds, there's millions of people living there, and they're going through their life and they're making their own way in the world and everything. But yet there is this, if you look at it from even if you take the microscope and you zoom out rather than zoom in, if you take it out, you realize they're in one of the most politically unstable places and dangerous places in the world. And yet people can still survive. So that's why I think that Garland, he actually researches it pretty well. I know that everyone's just going to bash him because he's like, that's not going to make sense because of that state. And that's it. But you're right, Christina. And I totally agree with you. The point is to take away the fact that at this point in America, there are no more parties. There is no red and blue anymore. There is, do you believe the crazy shit that is being served to you by someone that is going to innately harm you and make you have to just blue pill it? It's very matrixy, actually, when you think about it. It's like, do you buy into the machine or do you buy into the real world and freedom? And so, and that's where these journalists get to kind of go between the lines. And that's an interesting thing. You don't really, I mean, they clearly are not in support because they're at a massive threat in their profession by the presidency of President Nick Offerman in this movie, which is also very jarring because it, and Nick
Yeah, it's very
Offerman is
sure.
this guy. And you're like, what the? No, come on. Like, put like a different face there. Not Nick Offerman, sweet man. He's like picking strawberries on The Last of Us, and
yes,
now he's being like the president of the United
exactly.
States. Like, but no, I think that the way the world is set up is very. I think it actually would be what happened if we had a modern civil war, where we would have places and states that say that's none of my business, and then there would be ones that be like, no, we have to do something, and then there would, and yeah, I mean, unfortunately, it would be like Washington D.C. would be ground zero for martial law, and it would almost feel like a, I wouldn't, I'm not going to go this far, but it would feel very much like how. To get into Washington, D.C. would be almost like getting into North Korea if you had mm-hmm. some sort of, if you had a, you know, a real run of it, because that would be the ground base for any, for anybody at that point, if they were running a dictatorship.
The world building that he's done here is really interesting because it keeps you guessing and it keeps you just asking questions in a way that I was not prepared for, because I thought all those questions were going to be served to me on that trailer platter we were talking about, but here's not. The movie starts with some kind of really violent situation where the police and there's a group of people, both very desperate. You know, we need water for our children. The police are holding them back, and protesters. And this is where we meet several of these journalists. Kirsten Dunst, who I have to say is absolutely magnificent in this movie. Do you agree?
I think it's one of her best roles in years. I think it's so fully layered, and yeah, it's incredibly beautiful work by one of our great actresses that we have today.
She's playing Lee, who is supposedly sort of a iconic female photojournalist whose namesake is the real Lee Miller. We understand and we see really horrific things that she's taken pictures of through the years, where she's kept completely neutral, photographing some of the most horrific acts of war you can imagine. And in Kirsten Dunst's face, in her movements, in her body language, in her eyes, she just seems completely not void of emotion. That's the wrong word. Like she's built 7,000 walls to be able to handle this and to keep this ethics in her head of, I can't take a side, I can't go in, I can't do anything about this situation, I just have to take a picture of it, I just have to send it back. And as she voices in the film, her goal has always been to sort of show her country, the US, this is what we shouldn't be getting into. And now she's in the midst of it actually happening in her home territory. And she's partnered with a South American-born reporter, I guess, Joel, played by Wagner Mora, who's also really great in the film. And he's more of that one that I think we've seen in several films, the adrenaline kick reporter who's like, get me to the scene. And tell me about the two other ones.
Well, yeah, I mean, they sort of, in the beginning of the film, there's a car bombing and it involves those people that you're talking about. That are looking for food and water. It reminded me a lot of, when I was watching that, it reminded me a lot of like a hurricane situation or a, weirdly enough, we can't bring all of our past politics in. And I was sitting there, I was like, oh, this is like that time when Trump went to Puerto Rico and those people, there were hundreds of thousands of people like needing the supplies. And he's just like tossing little pieces of toilet paper and shit to, you know, and you're just like, it's the bare minimum, you know what I mean? And it really is the bare minimum, but these people, they need the bare minimum to survive. And because the US dollar is completely tanked, like the Canadian dollar is more powerful. We mm-hmm. see like Lee later when they're trying to fill up a tank of gas and they say that she has Canadian money, and it's, you know, which is kind of wild if you've ever been to Canada mm-hmm. and know the difference between, it's like for an American, it's like 25% off. It's like a wonderful sale to go to Canada. And now it's like, holy shit, like our dollar doesn't mean anything. Which also, if our dollar didn't mean anything, then it would also not be good for allies in the World Bank and everything. But that also just talks to a little bit about also when you're thinking about how our country is falling apart, how that impacts the rest of the world is truly fascinating. But yeah, I mean, Lee and Joel are essentially they're photographing this, and the bombing happens, and
And he wants to get to Washington. He wants to interview the president because he feels that the president doesn't have a long time
no,
left
he
before
sees the
the.
writing on the wall based off of the Western forces kind of colliding with the Florida territories, and essentially everybody is weirdly unified in the idea of getting rid of the president. And they're moving quickly in getting rid of the I guess United States forces, these traitors. And Lee saves this girl, Jessie, played by Kaylee Spaney, who is essentially a super fan, but also wants to get into this line of field with them. And Lee's very hesitant on the idea of this because, and I think that this is sort of the mastery of Dunst's performance. It's like, she knows that what this life can be on somebody's just psyche and what you have to have. And it's not a sideshow. It's not a hobby. It's real and it's raw and it's visceral. And I think that she's trying to prevent Jesse from seeing that side. Because once you, it's one thing to live it, it's another thing then to have to be able to see it from the lens and from the perspective of that you're not just doing it for yourself, you're doing it then for everybody else.
But she also sees herself in her. She
Yeah,
sort of resigns to
she
the
sees the
fact that she's
regrets.
good. Yeah.
Yeah, but I think she sees a lot of the regrets of if somebody had tried to pull me into this, I would stay the far fuck away from it as possible. And she kind of says that. But Joel, who is just kind of like hey, come on, man, I will teach you the ropes. And she's not very happy about that. But I think that the great thing is when this movie kind of slows down and there are moments between Spaney and Dunst, which I was like, if you're Sofia Coppola watching this, you got to have like a tear in your eye in an IMAX screening, seeing your two girls up on the
Yeah,
screen.
I was part of
Absolutely.
this.
Yeah, like those are my girls, those are my actresses, damn it. And they're killing it, and they work absolutely incredible together. And they're also alongside Sammy, who's a veteran reporter, who's kind of like their counterpart friend slash also a guy that has beat them to the punch before, and goes along with them, played by Stephen McKinley Henderson, who is
Oh,
phenomenal
so
in
good.
this movie, and one of the great character actors that we have working today, period. Obviously
Sorry, Joel
older.
describes his the character of
Yeah.
Joel describes the character of Sammy as someone, a journalist who writes for what's left of the New York Times.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And so yeah, he's writing it from his perspective, but they both all kind of come together, because they feel that if they can tackle this beast together, that it would be beneficial to the both of them. And I think that there's a great scene. It's in the trailer, it's manipulative in the trailer, but it works in the film, of just Sammy talking to Joel about the questions and how they will get stopped essentially with these answers. And he kind of basically says, you're only really going to get one before they bag you and tag you and get you out of there. So you better make it good. And you better hope that he answers it, because your whole thing is riding on that. And this whole trip is riding on it. And I think then this movie ends up becoming a road trip movie, weirdly enough, through the battered and bruised remains of America.
Which a trip that would take, what, 3 hours from New York to Washington takes is like a
Yeah.
complete lifetime of many. I'm going to get into some particular scenes. I'll wait a little bit of that for the spoiler section. I want to ask you first in general about the filmmaking. This movie takes place really in broad daylight, which I found even more effective considering what we're seeing. What did you feel about the cinematography, the editing, his use of music, for example?
His mu use of music. Okay, I have to tell you a funny story really quick about it. It was leading into this movie. We were sitting in the IMAX, and So the lovely reps or whoever curated the playlist before this movie, I feel like they were part of the marketing of the trailer because every song was like CCR. It was John Fogerty, it was Bruce Springsteen, Born in
Oh,
the
wow.
USA, it was war, what's it good for? Absolutely. It was like every song that had
I'm
the
proud to
idea,
be an American.
there was that too. It was
Oh,
like
you're kidding.
a 4th of July barbecue. It was like Surrey play patriotic playlist, right?
They must have had a plan with this. They must have wanted us all to be completely confused at
I think, and
the
so any needle drop that he did in the movie was subdued by the context of what I had before. I think like I'm really just Christina, we're friends. I can tell you this. I'm really goddamn tired of directors just putting the slow version of a really good song by a cover artist in a
Oh, yeah.
fucking movie. I'm like really tired of it. And it, this is no different.
And
There's a
TV
scene,
shows.
yeah, there's a scene towards the end. I won't get into really spoilers about it, but you'll know it when you hear it, and you're just like, oh, okay, yeah, all right. But the imagery, that's a sequence actually at night, and that imagery is beautiful with the sort of fire and everything that's going on around it. But yes, I think that I always think horror movies are real interesting when they're in the daylight rather than they're at night. I feel like night's just like the cheap aesthetic, and we just assume. But if you can scare the shit out of people in broad daylight, I think that that's even more of effective filmmaking. And I think that a lot of this movie is done like that. I think like a lot of this movie is a horror movie for American audiences to watch, or maybe any audience that is feeling a little bit like, oh, our democracy might be gone like really, really soon. You know what I mean? So I think that the cinematography is absolutely beautiful, and Rob Hardy, I believe, is his DP on this film,
Who's
and
worked
it,
with him on most of the films, right?
yeah, he worked on him with Ex Machina Annihilation. He also did my favorite Mission Impossible movie, Fallout. So like he has got a beautiful sense of visual language. And I think that the movie is really, I think to buy into the premise of the movie, you have to have a really beautiful way in which you're looking in shooting America. You can't make a movie about photojournalism and have it look ugly. So like you just can't do that. And I think that it looks pretty good for the
And
most
the
part.
way they use in the middle of some of the most violent and really horrific scenes, when they sort of use the images from the cameras, that's the click
Yes.
click, and you see the either Kaylee Spaney's black and white, 'cause she does more artsy black and white work, and the other, and you see just the image isolated of some soldier screaming, which you can't really see during the violent action of the actual film, but isolated into this photography, which they use that quite a lot, I thought was quite a brilliant move, and elevated the pain and sort of horror of those scenes.
I think it also you juxtapose the beautiful, just photography with Jake Roberts' very good editing in those sequences of kind of cutting back to the what's happening live and what is being shot in the lens, and then the ability to of Garland to say, I'm going to kind of cut off the score or any music in moments of violence or in moments of tension. And the sound work in this movie, Christina, is incredible, especially like the last act of the film, in particular, is really, really good. But there's like moments when, they're following a group of soldiers, of sort of resistance soldiers against, Western Front soldiers, I guess you'd call them, Western territories. I don't remember what the hell those people are. But anyway, the good guys, quote unquote, versus the United States. And yeah, that whole sequence there kind of sets you up, and it also sets, I think, really Jesse up to understand fully the ramifications of, being slow on the trigger of something, being caught in the way, being in a completely different sort of mindset than what she thought this was going to be. The way Lee is very much intently on her after that is a testament because of this really intense sequence that I think a lot in that moment is supposed to put us through Jesse's perspective
Well,
of
she
what
gets the lesson of
they.
a
Oh, she gets a
that's the
big
thing.
fucking lesson in that thing, and I think it's the idea of you wanted to be thrown into the fire. This is what we deal with. It's not us sitting in a hotel bar with you in New York City, wasting our like drink tickets or whatever. You know what I mean? It is us in the field, putting our lives on the line alongside the people who are really actually putting their lives on the line. That's, I mean, like, if anyone in through an American history book has ever seen what it is like for a photojournalism to be on the scene to take those photos during war or during battles, it's not a glamorous position. It's very hard work. It's very dangerous too, because most times they're not armed. You know what I mean? They're entrusting their life literally to somebody else, and it's and so it's
And they're
you
in
can
the
be inspired.
way.
Yeah, and they're in the way, and
People
because
are
they're trying
pulling
to,
up
yeah.
their vests to put them to back up and stand here. And the whole thing is like.
When he grabs her, when the soldier grabs her back, yeah, or Joel does it too, I think as well. It's like they do it multiple times in that scene because she's so antsy, right, to do it. And it's like, yeah, you do that and you're gonna get a bullet to the head essentially, because there's a sniper out there, for God's sakes. You know what I mean?
You've got questions, we've got answers. Business leadership, ownership, and sales can be challenging. Tune into the Accelerate Your Business Growth podcast to learn from the world's experts. Join me, your host, Diane Helbig, as I chat with people who have expertise in various areas of business. You'll enjoy the lively conversations that are focused on providing you with the ideas, tips, and suggestions you need to realize greater success. Get what you need for your business when you need it from the people who have the answers. Accelerate Your Business Growth is part of the Evergreen Podcast Network and is available on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Well, let's get, I'm gonna, towards the end, I wanna ask you sort of about what you think the debate is going to be after people have seen the movie, as opposed to the trailer debate. But first, let's do some major spoilers here, listeners. Because there's a couple scenes I want to ask you about. And if you have any scenes you particularly want to talk to me about,
Well, there's one.
let's talk about the Jesse Plemons scene.
That's
This
the
is
one I
a
want to talk about.
major spoiler. So, Jesse Plemons, of course, 50% of my favorite couple, Hollywood couple, married to Kirsten Dunst. He is an absolutely terrifying figure. Our little road trip group of journalists. There's this whole thing that has happened where Jesse gets into another car and they follow that car, and it ends up that Jesse Plemons and his compatriots have taken Jesse and the other guy. And it's a horrific scene where they're standing in front of basically a dump truck filled with bodies. And they approach Jesse Plemons to save them or to get them out of this situation. And that's when he starts asking that question that I had for you at the top, what kind of American are you? And it's just a really horrific scene. What does Jesse Plemons' character in his really weird red heart sunglasses and violent tendencies represent, do you think?
I think it represents maybe mostly the fears that we thought that this movie was going to be. And he does it in a very isolating, terrifying way. He doesn't give you this throughout the film, which I think is great. Alex Garland, that is. I think he gives you a taste. How bitter. Well, he's set it up where, you know, there's that scene where in the small town, and yes, there are people on top of the rooftops trying to save their little piece of paradise while they still have it. But then there are going to be people that are going to take this way too seriously, that are never also going to let this go, regardless of that this if this war at the end and what happens to the president. There will be people throughout our history that will not let this civil war go, much like people have not let go of the what 200-year-old civil war that we've had now, where there's reenactments, where there's statues, where there's the Confederate flag and the arguments of that it's part of now their heritage, their birthright, their history, and we can't ignore it, even though it's not right, even though it was treasonous, even though they lost. And so, and what do people do? They then justify any of their actions by saying that, well, you know, I can do this. I can be this way. I can act this way because we're in a time of civil unrest. And I think that clearly they're not abiding to any military standards, or they're kind of going by their own code.
Oh, this is totally rogue. Yeah.
Yeah. And so this is essentially what happens when you allow a platform for divisive thoughts to be put into the consciousness of an individual. And so I found that to be really fascinating. And I think I think this is the scene of the year so far, Christina, because Plemons is like a dancing on a wire. You don't know what he's going to do. The tension is at, I think, pretty much the highest it gets in this movie, maybe the second highest. And he's just knocking it out of the park. It's a one scene turner. He looked so much like Philip Seymour Hoffman to me when I was watching this, and the parallels of like being a generational quiet actor made so much sense. And, you know, reading about how Dunst was even terrified of her own husband while he was doing the scene. And it's like the polar opposite of their work in The Power of the Dog, where they're a very tender, loving couple. And yet this is a madman. And I think it's really great stuff. And yeah.
If the trailer is so manipulative, why do you think we don't feel that the scene is?
Because I think, well, one, we've seen like an hour of the film beforehand.
There's so context.
We understand the context of the tone. I think that it's not, once again, presenting itself as, I mean, it is presenting it, though, in the way in which the film presents its divisive radicalism. It's really the only time we get to see radicalism in the film, really. Mm-hmm. Where we're watching a guy saying, like, who I feel kind of knows that his time is ending a little bit too. Like, you can feel like this is the only power I have left is to kill these journalists. And I think that the reason why I didn't feel that it was necessary. To, you know, necessary within the plot of the film. I think that you then get a grasp of which are the states that are deemed okay, which are not. I believe it's like Colorado and Minnesota.
At this point, I don't remember exactly, but we've seen several different reactions. We've heard about people who they just forget. They don't even want to think about that there's a war happening. Then we have that little town they go through, which is basically pretending it's not happening. Their stores are open. There's a little old lady walking her dog. We've met soldiers who are this way, journalists who are that way. And the scene is begins with Jesse just fun and games, jumping into another car. She's like having a good time. And it just makes it so jarring where this is where she ends up. Like, all that is over, kid. You can't do that anymore. And it really becomes the worst possible outcome of this situation.
But isn't it an interesting, Christina, juxtaposition? You talked about the use of daylight and how we talked about how it's very present and it's terrifying. And then when they're at the shelter from their stop on the road in the middle of the night at a place that, you know, is an abandoned like football stadium, soccer stadium, that's the place where they're at most peace, where they're the safest is at night. But in the daytime,
right,
when they're able, when you are able to be free, when you
cards,
are able to be open,
people, the little children are running around. Yeah.
Like, that's when you're at peace. But in the daytime, when people can see you and look into your eyes, that's when you're most that's when they're most terrified. I find that to be really a great juxtaposition. And a reason why a scene like this works is because we've seen them in comfort. And you would think to yourself, well, then just stay there. You know what I mean? Like just don't, you know, like don't go out into this. But yet it is obviously the cost of doing something like this. And you have to, I think, elevate the stakes a little bit. But I think that, yeah, it's, man, it's a rough scene because yeah, because it is the most on the nose, I guess you could say, about it. But I don't, but of course people have gotten already like up in arms about it, and they're, you know, and everything. And it's like, it's purposeful. I think it makes sense for the way in which the story trajects. And yeah, I mean, it also is to tell you that this is not a fun world, and this was not going to be a fun ride. You know, like, there's consequences to at every turn. I mean, there's the, I think, if you don't mind, the scene at the Winter Wonderland
Oh
where
God,
they're driving
yeah.
through, and there's a obviously a sniper,
But this
or
is the horror movie aesthetic that you.
yeah, two soldiers on the ground, right? Like, and there's a guy who's like, I guess, again, one of these fanatics that owns a crap ton of guns in a mansion, sitting on top of a, you know, in a fucking hill on a driveway, and he's shooting anybody that's coming nearby. And it's a hell of a, again, the sound work, the way in which it's dropped, you know, any score is dropped to build tension. Yeah, it's those, the scenes of violence are really, they take your breath away.
And these little details, one of the soldiers who's trying to get the sniper, he has painted nails and colored hair, and it's not like the soldier so you that you would expect. All these questions you have keep you.
Painted nails, the glasses. Yeah, I mean, everyone's kind of weirdly created their own version of what a soldier is, what is their purpose behind this. I mean, and that's the thing,
It's
is
also
that
like it's not the stereotypical, this is what
yeah.
soldiers look like. This is that's why
Yeah.
we don't really know if they're sides or who are these
Yeah.
people who are fighting now. Let's talk about the end too. They've gotten to DC, and this is where the real we see the combat.
Hell yeah. Yeah,
We
we
see
do.
them actually first arriving to where all the soldiers have sort of a base, and then everyone says, "We're leaving, we're leaving. This is being done now. We're going to Washington." And it's basically a combat situation in the streets of DC. You had some issues with the end, as do I actually.
So I think the combat, the warfare, again, that aspect of the film, absolutely breathtaking. I mean, for A24 to, I have to commend them really for allowing Garland to kind of go to this, to let him have this reign, you know, to be able to make a movie like this. This is kind of back-to-back years they've given their known directors, or directors that they trust, some big bigger budgets. Like, they did this with Ari Aster last year with Beau Is Afraid. Didn't really care about the consequences or not of a 3-hour anxiety inducing film. And then they don't really care about this one. Like, they're just releasing these movies that they think are necessary, and so I kind of commend them for that. But when we get into the White House is where I have an issue. I don't know how you felt, but the way in which Lee's character is sort of handled, and how it's kind of Jesse's fault for Lee having to sacrifice herself because Lee gets killed by bullets from the Secret Service, and saving Jesse. But then the sort of final finality of killing the president, and in the photo and everything there, like that last 5 minutes. I'm curious, Christina, what you thought about it. For me, I'm still wrestling with the idea of that, if it works. It kind of feels like it goes against a lot of what we had been watching, which is really great stuff, and it kind of then deteriorates a little bit of, you know, because it's so on the nose. Both of those scenes, and it leaves you, I left me at least with a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth, but still liking the overall experience a lot. But I don't know what you thought specifically about the ending, because I felt that it could have been It could have been better. And
it didn't work.
Yeah. Okay.
In terms of the two of Lee and Jesse, I thought they sort of went out of character. We'd learned certain things about them and also what Jesse had been through. And all of a sudden, she's just a renegade. She's doing all these stupid things. And it was too close to what she had just seen and what she had just witnessed for her not to be more careful to, sure, want to really document this situation. But there should have been things that she should have learned at this point. And
like a scene was missing between them,
yeah,
or something to establish that, yeah.
And the fact Kirsten Dunst's character has the first panic attack we see right outside of it just felt like they very quickly went out of character and very quickly it felt rushed how Lee died in a way that just to get the point across that, of course, Jesse would take the picture of her dying. That was the whole point he wanted to get to, since they had been talking about that earlier. She had asked, would you take the picture of me getting shot? And you understand that Lee says, of course I will. And it wasn't as emotional as several of the other deaths, even if the deaths were really quick and violent. And I don't have an answer for you what the president should have said or how that. It just, the whole movie was so much more interesting and thought out than I thought it would be coming in, with all these questions left for us to answer rather than answered by the film. So when the last thing the president says and when that shot, it just felt like the movie was better than the ending.
It felt like, I like the idea of the forces coming in there alongside these journalists. Clearly they're all allies with each other, but I like the idea of essentially like the journalists are trying to get to the president before the Western forces sort of like come in there and want to kill him, because like they're like, no, this guy is going to pay for what he did. And I like the idea of essentially being like, well, they're no different than probably the president. That's not something that's new, but it is also in this movie. It's showing the complicated, like, you know, morality that even our heroes have and that these journalists have kind of faced. So I like that angle and that perspective. I just feel like it's then tossed for a very conventional ending of, well, I got my quote, they got their guy, we took the photo, and that's history. And that's not, I think, what the film was trying to say. We're not trying to do a history lesson here, or like a, you know, cautionary real tale about, you know, what is the real truth. I think there should have been even more of a struggle between Joel, like when Stephen McKinley Henderson's character, Sammy, passes, they're all in complete shambles. They're not really like that with Lee,
who's our that's main the character. Thing. It's just like,
and it's very like,
so
it's
unemotional.
Very, I mean, I felt like a moment where this is how I feel, and I'm not trying to rewrite a script, but I feel like Joel would have slapped that damn camera out of her hand and say, you're not taking that photo of either one of them, the president or Lee, and there would have been a moment between the two of them like, you caused this. I actually think that would have been the better scene. It's like she's about to take it, he's, you know, it's like, you caused this, and make her live through it, to then, because of the mistakes like that Lee has, she, it's haunted her. This would be the mistake that haunts Jesse. She takes that photo of the president, but it's very reluctantly. Her hands are kind of shaking. Like, I think that would have been a hell of a lot better. It's all done so stone face and on the nose. It doesn't ruin the movie and the most of that experience. No. But it is one that's kind of like, damn it. If you would have landed this, it would have been like really, really good.
Well, for me, it's one of those times I would have loved an open-ended.
Yeah, an open-ending also too would have just been like, yeah, or you know what? They get into the Oval Office and we cut it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Or he's not there.
Or maybe it's just, would have kind of been cool too, is if it was just audio rather than like see, like we're talking about what the, and then we end with the photo or something, like, I don't know, like we just hear it, we don't see it. So we have to then, we then have to project, which is again, another thing that we as an audience that is going to read and see these photos has to do in the first place. So there's some more interesting ways he could have gone about it for sure. I have the questions of what, I mean, obviously what's next? What happens now? I mean, because what have they, the actions that they've done, have they then essentially, have they brought democracy back? Or are they, I mean, democracy was started, you know, in this country based off of blood and war and death. So, I mean, have you?
And that's interesting because we don't know if there's another leader out there ready to take the reins. We don't know anything about that. It's just that that's why it could have been even more open-ended what happened.
Yeah. Is the status quo going to go back to the way it was, or are we in such damage as a country? Or in this film, is the country so much divided and torn apart and tethered from the events of this president? Can it be rebirthed? Can we go back to America? I don't think we can when you've gone this far in the modern age, but he's not interested in that. He's not interested in that kind of movie. Though he lays enough hints for you to, if you want that movie, it's kind of in here, but that's not interesting. That's not what he's making a movie about journalism, right? You know, so.
But what we know about the status quo is that people will be divided. What do you think the new divisive discussion is going to be about this, the film?
I mean,
what's your prediction?
I think people, I've already seen it because I've already seen people put up their reactions online. I've seen a lot of 1.5s and a lot of 2 stars. Would have also loved to seen a lot of that when Men came out, people, but you gave it a pass. I think this is a far more interesting and complex movie. And I think it's a movie where you, I mean, I've liked it more as we've talked about it, Christina, because it's a movie that provokes discussion. And that's interesting. Like, I think that for me, that gets a 2.5-star pass already because it's an interesting enough movie to have a conversation and a dialogue. Even more so that if that conversation veers into more of what's going on now, because we need to be politically and socially conscious. We can't just go online, like and retweet an article. We actually have to live in the muck a little bit of it and examine the various ways in which our system is being oppressed, but also how its effect on people and how people will respond to it. And I think from a cultural, from a critical standpoint, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to, one, call this pretentious, which I can understand that. They're going to call it, you know, they're going to ask Garland to retire, which, you know, he's already kind of like, I'm just going to take a step back for a little bit, which is fine. He's not retiring. He's just taking a little step back from the director chair. But I mean, it'll be divided because I think that that's kind of the point. And I think if we all universally liked a movie called Civil War, that I would not have that on my bingo card. You know what I mean? Like I would not sit here and go like, wow, we all like that one, huh? Kind of shocked. Like it was
the movie, Alex Garland's Civil War is what brought America together.
Together? Yeah. No, but I mean, like the night I was at my premiere, there were conversations there and people were conflicted, and I think that made for the most fascinating conversations about it. Like it doesn't have to, I don't think it has to work for you in order for you to, you know, like, I kind of like that there's negative reactions. I think the sort of vapid, like it's trash, get, you know, move on with your life. That's not interesting. So if you do that, I mean, I don't think you really, maybe you need to watch it again. Maybe you need to like examine whether you should do film criticism or any kind of commentary, but, because that's just not how I would process a movie like this. I would come on the show and I would talk to Christina about it, or I would do it on our show and I would talk about it. I think there's various different avenues, but I think there's going to be different opinions because I also think too, politically speaking, we're so divided that a movie like this would be divisive in terms of, did you bring your politics into this, or did you allow essentially an outsider's perspective to come in here and examine not just our country, but anybody that's going through this. This is not, he's using us because we're the biggest example of, for audiences to grasp, you know, these sort of themes and everything.
I mean, he, as a Brit that he is, he was talking about, I heard him in several interviews about this could have been anywhere.
This could have been England. This could have been England. This could have been, the United Kingdom. This could have been in France. You know what I mean? This could have been, again, in South America. It could have been in, you know, the far, in the Middle East. It could have been anywhere, you know, but he chose this, our country, because we have the resources where if there was going to be another side, right, if there was going to be a faction, then, you know, they could put up an interesting enough fight.
And of course, he's playing with the political divide that is that's happened in the States. And I also think that there's going to be another group of people who feel that, who wanted this to be more of just an action movie. They don't want the journalism war thing.
It's an A24 movie. You know what I mean? Like, come on. I go back to the original question, and I'd ask you this, because this is something that I am worried about, because I'm just worried about things in general. Do you feel like a movie like this, regardless of if people see it or not, there could be some sort of reaction, not negative, but a violent reaction to it? Like, that, I think that that's something. I mean, remember when Joker came out, not to bring up Joker, and I remember police having to scan, like, you know, to wand people, like you're going into a football stadium or something, like check purses and things. People were terrified. And I don't think they were at that level, but I hope that we don't get to that point, right, where somebody takes this, and which is a movie that doesn't really go into a blueprint of how a civil war would start, but then feeds those thoughts that are already out there by certain individuals.
Look, I mean, we've seen so much now that I would never say never to anything, people taking the wrong message from pretty much anything that happens today. I mean, that's sort of the state of our situation. But I have to say, to answer your question, when the trailer came out, that thought struck my mind that that would be, after seeing it, if people actually see it, I'm not as worried, because it is more vague than it is a blueprint, as you call it. We don't actually know the politics here. What we really know is that people have been turned against each other for all kinds of different reasons, and this is what happens when people turn against each other. That's what we know. So I'm less worried about that the movie will sort of be hijacked by a certain group in order to use it for their politics.
Yeah, I'm hoping there's not a like a copycat. Does that make sense? Like, because like,
but like, who, like, Jesse Plemons, or
no, I'm talking about like artistically a copycat. Like somebody sees this movie, or you know what I mean, and they're like, it didn't go far enough, and they make another one. Like, I don't need to see a Civil War universe, or more like, or I don't need a deep impact to this Armageddon. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need
that's true.
I don't need the yin to the yang on this one. Like, this is just fine the way it is. I just, you know, because I feel like those are already out there. But I do feel like there will be, I don't know, I just kind of want, I mean, hopefully, no pun intended, a civil discussion between everybody about this. It won't be. But I mean, also too, I think that people might be genuinely surprised that it's not as visceral as that trailer. And I think so too.
Both you and I were not. That's what I'm hearing. The few people I know that have seen it at this point. More people have probably seen it when this show is out. But it's going to be definitely, I think it's going to surprise people what it actually is.
Yeah. No,
I mean,
for sure.
even poor Kirsten Dunst's press tour has had to. I think she's felt several of those types of questions.
Yeah, I think that she's been the whole cast, even Garland too. They've been put through this sort of really hard thing of being of having to like answer questions about the state of America, and it's like you're not asking them real questions about the fucking film that they made. It's like you didn't see it, like and
But promise me, if you or I get a chance to talk to Garland, can we ask him if about that trailer? And if
I mean,
he.
I think it is a I think that that is a fascinating question to ask him about the subversion of expectation. And
Maybe it was the point.
maybe
A24,
it,
you know.
yeah, is the point to just get him into the theater to see that? Like, I think that that is a I think that that's a better question than like, hey, do you think that this could actually happen? Which is probably what they've answered like 900 times already, But no, yeah, if I did talk to Garland, which I don't know if I will, because he seems like a little bit of an just a really intimidating kind of guy, and he's just always it's like or also just too like I don't know if I want to talk about this all the time, you know what I mean? But I don't know if the opportunity presents itself, yeah, you should totally ask him that, Christina.
But it is a risk. They took a risk, or they did a miscalculation, or some trailer producer was like, yeah.
Well, I mean, you mentioned this also too. I think that this is a fascinating thing, and I talked about it a little bit as well. A24's the last 2 years, they have allowed their mostly known or big brand directors to make a big statement. Beau Is Afraid did not make a ton of money at the box office, but they didn't care about that. This movie will probably do okay. Like it won't. I don't think it'll like make $100 million or anything, but or maybe it bombs. I don't know. I mean, I'm not a box office prognosticator. But I mean, I do think that that's an interesting thing going forward is like this studio that sees essentially like that they can recoup their money through other more of their audience friendly material, but yet they're making something provocative and discussion based. And so I yeah, again, I as much as I don't think that their marketing department did a good job for this movie, I have to commend them for green lighting it because this also is a very it's a very it is a little bit bold for you to take a risk like this and make it. But yeah, glad that I'm essentially saying thank God for A24. I can't wait for all the merch to come out of this.
And finally, do you see Oscar? For me, Kirsten Dunst could definitely be
I would
on the
love her
radar.
too, just because I mean, like Kirsten Dunst is like one of the great actresses of the 21st century. I mean, I'm at a complete disadvantage because I'm like in the middle of a Sofia Coppola movie series over at Director Watch. So I'm like really invested in her as an actress right now. But I would love her to get in there. I mean, I would love Stephen McKinley
Oh,
Henderson.
yeah, perfect.
I know that like they don't nominate one scene actors anymore, but Plemons is incredible as well too. I think it's very well shot. I think the sound work actually could really get in. Like that's it's really really great sound work. And maybe editing too because it's a editing, but it's so far away. I mean like
Yeah, sort of depends on if it
it
becomes
depends
a
on
huge
if
deal or if it just dies out and withers
well
away.
honestly it depends on how the industry kind of takes it because like honestly it really doesn't I don't think I don't think people give a shit. Like the Oscars don't care about like what some critic with 200 followers has to say about this movie. Like they care if they like it, you know what I mean? Because there's a ton of people online that don't like. I mean, they don't name a movie that they didn't like over the last couple of years that the Academy like loved, Yeah, I would say that it depends. It depends on too of like what A24 has. I know that they always have like 900 movies They're the studio that when they send the screeners, you get like a stack, but yeah, I think the sound nomination would be really good, because it's because again, it's very visceral, that sound, especially like any gunshot going off in this movie it kind of jolts you. Those are the jump scares.
Right.
Christina, those are the jump scares of the bullets. Yeah. So,
Ryan, this is so interesting. I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens.
If you and I
happen to be in sync, or if it just everyone's gonna.
I like that everyone's all over the board with it. And I think that those are the more interesting. We need more movies like this.
Either way, what you think about it, whatever, just the fact that I think people will be talking about it, they're going to have questions. It's not a movie that gave you all the answers. You have to think for yourself and discuss them with people that you want to discuss them with. And just that we need more of that.
Yep. I totally agree. It's kind of like that video that James Gray talked about, where you need movies, these mid-level movies that maybe they don't make a lot of money for that studio, but they find an audience and they provoke discussion, and they allow an artist to explore a territory that they haven't done before. And so I'm all for those. I'm all for this. Even though Alex Garland was completely on thin ice after Men, and this trailer, I was like, fuck, this guy is, I'm done with him. He's back in moderately good graces. Like he's, I wouldn't say he's back to like Annihilation, Ex Machina territory for me, but I appreciate what he did.
And at least it's nicer to talk to you about this than it is about the real thing coming up in November. So
I know I'm just a entertainment journalist, but good God. Yeah. I never talk about politics. But I know that you do on the show, and you've had some great episodes already this year.
More about how we're covering it in our unpopular culture.
Well, yes,
this is an interesting example.
I think a discussion like this is very vital, because, covering this, however the best way you can, is the way in which we can get people out there to vote. And you can't, the only way the bad people win is if we all get complicit in the idea that the bad people are going to win. So as much as I'm, when it comes to politics, I'm a bit of a skeptic, and I'm a bit of a Debbie Downer. When it comes to, Christina knows this about me, I'm a bit of a Debbie Downer, because people, I have to put my faith in people. I still hope that I'm wrong. I always like to be hopeful that I'm wrong about that. My Oscar predictions, I like to be 100% right. but my political opinions, I like to be completely wrong. And that means that maybe good things happened. So,
well, on that note, Ryan, thanks so much again. Tell everyone where they can read your stuff and
find you. awardswatch.com. That's where all the written stuff and the podcast, Director Watch, Watch Watch podcast go.
Which
over
I
there
was where, just on, Director's Watch.
Christina was just on our Lost in Translation episode. Please go and listen to that and the rest of that series. It was a fun episode. And we're gonna have her on again for someone down the road. Go find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd at RyanMcQuaid77. And Christina, thank you once again for having me on, my friend.
Thank you so much, my friend. Talk to you soon. Thanks so much to Ryan McQuaid for joining me. Pop Culture Confidential is a part of the Evergreen Podcast Network. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time. Don't you know that
you're a grown-up? I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. Life sucks as a grown-up. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. No, right.